Welcome to Sonata Secrets with Henrik Chilham, unlocking the world of classical music.
I love the Chopin Nocturnes, but he's not the only one who's written them. It just means music of the night somehow, and it's often calm and collected pieces with a singing melody over broken chords. And half a century after Chopin's death, still in France, Gabriel Fauré wrote piano music that goes further in exploring the chromatic depth of counterpoint while retaining a lyrical and radiant surface. He's written 13 nocturnes and 13 barcaroles that kind of constitutes the main bulk of his piano repertoire, and the 6th nocturne in D-flat major is considered one of his greatest. It's a substantial piece of music, almost 9 minutes long, with 3 different textural ideas with different tempi and time signatures and seemingly endless modulation. But it comes together very nicely, and it says something incredibly beautiful that can't be expressed in the tonal language of Chopin. I'm going to play the whole first section, so just take in this music, and I'm going to give my take on it in the analysis section that follows. Enjoy! This piece was a request by my Patreon sponsor, Mr. S. Lam, so a big shout out to him for making me play this. So let's start with the melody in the beginning. So it's kind of a floating feeling of not exactly clear where the meter is, but I actually feel it as it's a clear sequence of 2 beats at a time that repeats and going downward. So that's 2 beats, and then it's kind of the same contour and repeating. And then the third time, it's kind of expanded the unit to 3 beats. So there we get into this real triple time. But of course, it's kind of written like this to be evasive of these clear downbeats. But anyway, that's the melodic material. And then the harmony, it starts to get tricky. If we look at the bass, it's almost too good to be true, just keeping the D-flat tonality, because the chords doesn't match this at all. But let's start from the back. It's actually a clear cadence in the end here. We have, it's the D-flat 4-5-1. We have the 4, the G-flat. And then we have the A-flat, the dominant 7, to the D-flat. But he delays the resolution of the chord, the bass resolves to D-flat, but we keep the A-flat dominant. So it's A-flat over D-flat, and then resolves the harmony as well. And before that, D-flat. This is the dominant, but with an F on top. It's kind of like a 13th chord. Sometimes I call it the dominant 7 add 6, because some a 13th chord, maybe you should have the 9 there, but for simplicity's sake, I call it a 13th chord. But, and this is like a typical French cadence, and you have it everywhere in 4A. So that's the end of the phrase. Now in the beginning, the first chord is D flat major also, and then F minor. So with this G natural, it feels almost more in F minor than D flat major. And then this B flat minor 7. And here, this C half diminished is really kind of unstable mystical chord. So here we get back the G flat and not the G natural anymore. So this chord really makes it keep going away. And the bass continues up to D flat. And this is, now we're connecting the two parts. The melodic sequence keeps going, connecting it, but now also the harmony. This is a D flat 11 that clearly points to G flat. So then it's connected in a traditional way as well. It's just super nice with all these chord flavors all the time. Let's do the whole phrase again. On the way home. Stability. And he really needs this, like a full bar of only the D flat with the A flat over D flat in the first beat to really rest on this harmony. Okay, that's the first phrase. We're only 3 bars in and it's happened so much already. Second phrase, now it's only 2 bars, it's a shorter phrase. Let's play it first. So again, it comes to rest on a stable harmony, and it starts on a A-flat first inversion as well, A-flat 7. And here, this is a B-flat 7 first inversion with this nice dark appoggiatura. And continuing, so a B-flat 7 points to E flat, and with this appoggiatura it kind of points to E flat minor because the D flat is the third in the E flat minor, and the bass follows the harmonic order, goes to E flat, but the melody deviates and goes to C flat. So this is the big surprising chord, turns it into a C flat major first inversion, or a B major, and harmonically spelled as C flat, because we're in flatland. But we go kind of back immediately to a known territory. A flat in the bass, F minor on the first beat, and then A flat major 7 on the second beat. It makes more sense in context, because now the next phrase starts the same way as this. The only difference is we get the C flat straight away, turns this whole into a diminished chord, but the same C flat. And now when the melody shoots up, it reaches higher to this. It's a D flat 9, and then we get this magical switch to it's B double flat major, or enharmonically equivalent to A major. And the third beat we see, it's A major, the same notes, it's differently spaced. So, amazing shift here. It sets up, it paves the way for an answering phrase that's a bit longer. It starts on A major. We recognize the end, it's the exact same as the first phrase, and actually the whole melodic material is the same, but it's cast in a completely different harmonic suit. because it's modulate halfway through. But the first steps were in A major to this lovely chord. The bass goes just A, D, E, A, and 1-4-5-1. And it's kind of the same cadential progression with some extra flavor notes, of course. D is a 4 in A, subdominant, but with a major 7, the C sharp. Like a typical Fourier thing. Then E, dominant, but it's an E11, it still counts. Here we get the third. To A, but immediately it's A7, so continuing pointing forward. To it. Now, this is a pure diminished chord. B flat diminished to E flat 7 and to this French cadence A13 to the resolving to D flat. It's actually quite straightforward. It's only one trick that Fourier does. He puts the bass offset on syncopation. So if I play the bass on the beat, it's more clear that it's only a B diminished modulating back to E flat to A flat to D flat. But he delays the bass and it contributes to this kind of floating, unclear feeling. Until the A flat. So we get to rest a little bit again. Now we're halfway through the first section, the first page. Now for the second part of the first section, it gets slightly more expanded. The harmonic movements are relentless. It's a clear A flat 7, dominant to D flat again. We're just reaching it by some strange means. From D flat, half diminished, to diminished, to D, second inversion, to A flat. So it's a tritone move, D to A flat. Really cool, and Fourier kind of uses the inner voices to create this A flat. It's a sus4 as well, A flat 7, the D flat. So it's a, the inner voice goes like D to D flat to C. The voice leading there. Now we get this sequence repeated. So this time it reaches another dominant 7. It's a B7 that points to E, and we have already in the bass. And this time from A flat 7. It kind of goes straight as a deceptive cadence to A minor. Like A minor, first inversion, with this tense appoggiatura on the sharp fourth. Flirting with a C7, but going back to A minor. A minor and C are relative keys. It's just really ambitious harmonic moves here. From A minor is not that far away to this B dominant that we get here. So in general, this section, it expands the texture. You see the right hand is much higher up and thicker chords. Now we get the sequence for a third time, and now it kind of resolves to where the dominant is pointing. To E major. Bass goes up to first inversion, and so the appoggiatura is on the 2 going to 3 and to 1, but immediately it turns this E major to a D sharp 7 to a C sharp. So E, the this kind of, it's a C sharp 9, it's also close to a G sharp minor, but C sharp. And now it gets even more accidentals all the time. But from here on, C sharp is the enharmonic equivalent to D flat. So we're starting to get flats now again. It means we're going back to the tonality of D flat major. So G flat, but diminished. If the bass didn't move, it would be a resolution to G flat. Same appoggiaturas as before, but diminished, and bass keeps it moving forward with a B flat 7. We've had this before as well, and with a dark appoggiatura to E flat, and here the melody just goes wild with a distant melody appoggiaturas. But the bass is in known territory. E flat 7 to A flat. And here you see immediately all the accidentals disappear. So we're in D flat tonality. And here Fourier just pulls out all the stops of an extended cadence. So it's A flat, the dominant, but it's a 6-4. D flat. A flat in the bass, and some nice kind of inverted fanfare going down here. A flat 7, and the same thing, A flat 7, but the bass resolves first, and nice pianistic things. Now, and it resolves to D flat in the very last note of this section. So I'm not going to do the whole piece in as much detail, but let's look a little bit at the different sections at least. So the second section starts here after a fermata. Sounds like this. Same as the start. So again, really hard to pin down what's happening. It's a different kind of energy with the accompaniment on the offbeats. And the meter is kind of hard to catch in the beginning. I think it makes sense to think of it as the first two bars as one hemiola of a bigger three-time bar. And then three normal triple time bar here. Again, the harmonic moves are really kind of hard to track. It's going forward, and at some points you can have stability, for example towards the end of this, and going back to, so C sharp minor is where it starts. It's kind of a enharmonically flipped from D flat, going from D flat major to the minor, but it's easier to spell C sharp minor than D flat minor. Here we have this 13th chord again. This, just as a pausing. Now crescendo going somewhere. Have a stable point, it's going to E major, that's a relative of C sharp minor, and again we have a clear, the last part of the harmonic progression is quite clear, A, that's a 4 to 5 to 1 in E major, and again we have A major 7, the major 7 on the 4, resolving. So then we get like a second part of this B section. Mm-hmm. the left hand and the right hand are in dialogue a bit, and we get this. It's all the time like short melodic sequences that repeat, and sometimes, a lot of the times the harmony goes somewhere that's not what you'd expect. So for example, it's G7. It's like pointing back to C sharp minor, but then going to this A7, the 7 in the bass. It's like some oscillation between those, and then somewhere B flat major, maybe diminished, half diminished. Really hard to, I don't really know where it's going. I just know that it's going somewhere, and that's the important thing. It's just kind of searching, it's foggy around it. That's the clouded part of Fauré. But anyway, eventually we get to this point. We get a sequence that repeats this way. Upward. This is the exact same ending as the end of the first section. Recognize the textures and these suspensions. It's all the way to the last part of the cadence, and then it takes a new turn, of course. So the first time we go to an A flat 7 here, go back to D flat major, but now it's like it's B flat minor 7. Is it? Yeah. And augmented. And lovely minor major 7. A minor major 7. And finally, it takes an extended detour, but somehow finds its way back to A flat and D flat in the end again. So. Lovely. And same thing here, A flat 7, bass resolves to D flat as a pedal point. And reach D flat. So that's the B section. It's like more things happening, and it's more energy than the first, kind of a little bit calmer nocturne feeling. And here we reach the third section, the C section, we can call it. And it's again completely new contrasting material. It's allegro moderato, new time signature, and new texture of 16th notes. It's a lovely thing. It sounds like this. So this is D flat major, but then it flips here and the soaring melody enters in A major. Lovely cadence here on E, 13th version, French cadence to A. So there are some, cool harmonic moves here. I'm not going to go into detail, but this whole section, like the character of it, reminds me so much of Fauré's Requiem, the last movement there in Paradiso. Just give you an idea, that sounds, it's like the same, it starts like this. And then the sopranos enters. And it's like not a problem in the world, just enjoy paradise. It's the text here in the end of the Requiem. And he uses the D major with a 6 here. And it's kind of the same here. It's A major. It's a little bit more pianistic more intense paradise. Mediant move to C major. But it's A major with a 6 as well. Yeah. Okay, this goes on for a while. It repeats. And then we start to feel like kind of a developmental feeling, because Fauré starts to integrate material from the B section with the C section. So after a while we get this. It's actually really cool, because the first time it's in triple time and now it's like a big 4-bar. It's kind of altering the rhythms slightly, but it's really the same material as when we have it here. But now it's like this. And now it's like a struggle between the two textures, because now we get these bursts of 16th notes and scales. Again, back. A longer scale that time. And after this we get like a longer chunk of this B section, but it's going to some different, it's not an exact repetition, it's going different ways, but it's the same kind of chromatic tension. Here, continues and takes the sequences in a, like, in new positions. So it's I haven't memorized it. I would dread to memorize this because it's so weird. It's cool. And here, instead of getting a climax, it's just a abrupt change back to the Paradiso feeling. Now we get scales in the left hand, lovely, lovely, underneath this appoggiatura. This is really good piano writing, joy to play. Again, French 13th cadence. Again, same. And now we're gonna keep on building, kind of start over. And now we use the last part of the Paradiso melody with the big triplets. Just take that. And it's another of these like outrageous harmonic progressions where the chords, it's really hard to make them fit together in a functional way, but I don't think that's how it's meant to be. It's just a sequence that's repeated. It goes upward. So here it starts on A. To C7, and then this pair of A and C is repeated higher, so now B to D7, and now continue one whole note higher to D flat, and finally the fourth time now the bass starts to drop down again, some kind of E flat sus to G flat major 7 to E flat minor 9 all the way to A flat, and this is like the biggest climax of the piece. I will try to play it together, but here look at the bass. This is actually kind of a hidden recapitulation from material from the first section, this like second phrase. that melodic content is now cast in the bass. But it's completely different character with the texture of the 60s notes. The 60s notes are thinning out here. And so these, like, I play octaves. I keep playing octaves here. I really don't understand why Fauré didn't write them out. Why not flesh it out? Here it's an octave again. So this is A major, second inversion. This is the end of like the whole middle section, the development. It's another pause. And then it's recapitulation of the first section. That's more, a bigger chunk that's the same. But first, let's play this build up to the climax. Time and then recap of the first more nocturnal feeling, but it's without bass. Bass enters on this syncopation. It's now more syncopated than the first time. So we get the repeat of this material all the way to the end, and then it's like a small coda with the same character and texture. So after this is the second way that we all had before. Now we go here. And this is the start of the coda, or codetta, if it's so closely connected. Here is the final outrageous harmonic progression with chords that's really distant, but the counterpoint is, like, the melodic positions are primary, and it's this appoggiaturas as well. But the bass goes down chromatically. Every chromatic note down to A flat. Resolution to D flat, and the harmony goes just whatever chords matches this chromatic in a way, and repeating the melodic sequence. Yeah, it kind of sounds wrong, so. The high point is here. So the resolution comes even sweeter when it's been so far out before. Let's do it one more time. Here it sounds like a Chopin nocturne for half a bar to here again. So now we're at the final stretch. Now it's basically we've established the D flat and the A flat in the bass. It's the final cadence. Then Fauré just plays with two notes. So C and E flat, that's part of A flat, the dominant goes to D flat. But he plays with C flat going to C natural and E flat and E flat. So he plays with these over these different bass notes, and he tries all the different combinations. So we get this amazing and dolcissimo, super sweet, amazing types of cadences, flavor of the chords here. So the final one is a clear A flat augmented, the C and the plus 5 to D flat. But like all the other, we have a D, 9, and then E, when we have this combination, A flat, A flat minor, to A flat augmented, and a nice rest bar with only D flat. To end the piece in a calm way. It's really spectacular music. I mean, the harmony might seem kind of wild and far-fetched with all the weird chromatic moves, sudden modulations, and non-diatonic sequences, but Fauré guides us gently back all the time, and it actually makes sense tonally on an underlying, deeper level. I can't explain how it is and how it works on every corner of the piece, because it's too much work for a video like this. But if you're interested, there is a master thesis by Hoi Wai Lin from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And she attempts this and goes through the whole piece thoroughly over like 100 pages. And I'm going to close this up by reading a quote from her thesis. A Schenkerian analysis of this nocturne reveals a surface in which the dimensions of harmony, melody, meter form, both individually and in various combinations, are by no means perfectly concordant. That is why the music sounds somewhat outside the tradition for which this type of analysis was designed. At the same time, it is possible to see how, allowing for a certain amount of conceptual freedom, it is possible to sidestep some of the many loose ends produced by a proliferation of fascinating details and to reveal a tight design of an essentially traditional cast. It presents us with a delightful equilibrium between innovation and tradition, the clouded and the clear, the conflicted and the concordant. Thanks for